Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. And we start on the front page: recreation, boat races, bring the fun. Lake event, a great way to showcase Decatur. I'm going to start with the caption because the photo is so interesting. Jersey Speed Skiff teams finish a heat as Hardy's race for the lake hosts the American Powerboat Association Inboard Nationals in Decatur on Saturday, June 6th. And in the foreground, we're seeing a green boat, JS-23, on the side. It says guest driver is Kevin Gunther. Owner is Keith Gunther. Rider is Nick Wheeler. And crew is Lyle, Paul, Marsha, Joe, Carol, Shane. Those are all on the rear side of the boat, printed on the side. And on the boat are two people in helmets, and red helmets, red life vests, and black, I don't know if it's waterproof or water-resistant gear. And they're looking toward the right of the photo and making some wake. And in the distance, looks like JS-22 it's a silver boat in black-bordered neon yellow characters. And then in the roll cage is a yellow-helmeted individual making a little more wake, so maybe going a little faster. Looks like a sunny day there on Lake Decatur. Joseph Ressler photos, Herald and Review. Just thought I'd start with that because it makes such an impact right at the beginning. And this article's by Donette Beckett, Decatur. To say Dan Hardy is a fan of boat racing is an understatement. He was the first sponsor 3 years ago when organizers began planning the return of boat races to Lake Decatur. His support led them to call the races the Hardy's Race for the Lake. However, Hardy knows the sport isn't just about the 1.25-mile course in the center of Lake Decatur. It's the people and getting together in Decatur, he said, but the boats are pretty exciting. Lake Decatur was surrounded by visitors from around the country, including racers, spectators, and fans watching the boat races this past weekend. Just like he did decades ago, Hardy watched the boat races take place. But instead of hanging out at a nearby friend's house, he sat with friends and family on the beach house deck. They had bands and carnivals back then, he said. Hardy had the opportunity to meet all of this year's boaters. They love it here, he said. They think this is the best one that they go to. Decatur was a hot spot for activities this weekend. Now is the time to be in Macon County, said Tanya Culp, executive director of the Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Boat racers arrive from both sides of the country to take part in the Hardy's Race for the Lake. Other activities that brought people to the area included the Macon County Fair, the summer shows at the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater, and the Officer Chris Oberheim Baseball Memorial Tournament in Forsyth. The fun continues this week with the Illinois Women's Pro Tennis Championship in Fairview Park. There is so much to do in our area, Culp said. You could vacation here and have so much to do and see. According to Culp, the events help the businesses, including the food trucks and art vendors. It's a great way to showcase Decatur, she said. Bringing people into your community isn't just for that one event. Lauren Ford took care of customers, ordering coffee and other beverages at Rockwell Coffee Company truck. Visitors from Maine to Arizona kept the crew busy. It's been good, she said. We just talk about how their weekend's been. Throughout the weekend, organizers watched the weather forecast. We can race in a little bit of rain, said Nikki Furlott, race chairman. We don't want thunder or lightning. According to the organizers, as well as the racers, the ideal wind speed is less than 12 miles per hour. The weekend's weather cooperated with the racers with no delays. The organizers prefer no wind, according to Sean Boucher, race director. Smooth as glass isn't ideal either, but we make chop, he said. about the water waves, one lap and the water's rough. Even after she retired, Terry Hamill, former Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau Executive Director, can't stay away from the lake during race weekend. "This is kind of like my baby," she said. "The races on Lake Decatur, more than 30 years ago, were important to the city as well as for Hamill." "I love this event," she said. "I like to come back and visit all the racers that I've made relationships with over the last couple of years." Hamill now volunteers at the race and is a member of the race committee. "I'm a long-running boat race lover," she said. 17-year-old Katie Brown has been racing boats for more than 7 years. "It's in my blood," the Washington State native said. Her father, grandfather, and great uncles raced as well. Katie and her sister also have participated in horse shows, but I stuck with boat racing, Katie said. The Brown family returned to Decatur after racing in the 2025 race for the lake. "It was so much fun," Katie said. "The course is huge. It's identical to one of the courses we run back in Washington." Her father, Kip Brown, understands the love of the sport. "It's all I ever knew. It's all I ever cared about. It's all I ever wanted to do," he said. His priorities have changed since then. "Now the most important thing is making sure Katie has fun," Brown said. "I want her to be safe. I want her to be competitive. And I want her to have fun." "If she can do all three of those, then that's a victory. It doesn't make any difference what the trophy says." Safety was also important to the local first responders surrounding the lake. The Decatur Fire Department assisted with dive rescues. "Fortunately, there were no incidents at the event, so that worked out great," said Justin Krause, battalion chief. "It made for an easy weekend." Krause admits the crew had the best seats. "It was a good time watching the race," he said. Ryan Huffer, communications coordinator for the city of Decatur, heard positive reactions from the racers. "They really enjoy Lake Decatur," he said. "I had one at the end of the event say they can't wait for next year. They're going to bring 5 more boats." Bowser takes care of everything related to the water. Clay Gerhardt, executive director for the Decatur Park District, is in charge of the land activities. Approximately 150 volunteers and first responders, including dive teams, ambulance, and lake patrol officers, were needed to make sure the event was successful. "It takes so many people to pull off a race like this," Gerhardt said. The park district focused on family activities. Approximately 50 arts and crafts vendors and 17 food trucks were parked in the lakefront parking lot. The beach house was open for business as well. "We like to say we bring the fun," Gerhardt said. "We're going to try and continue the boat races as long as the community supports it." And some large color photos here. Driver Michael Jarvis and crew member Randy Lemon of the Seattle area work on a new engine for their boat during Hardy's race for the lake in Decatur on Saturday, June 6th. There's one man on each side of the center of the engine. Its cover is open and off, and they're working on the engine with all sorts of tubes, wirings, cables, etc. Jackson Lewis 6 and Georgia Lewis 2 race boats of their own at a booth in Nelson Parks at Hardy's Race for the Lake in Decatur on Saturday, June 6th. And it looks like 2 long gutters on a table, and just the tips of paper boats are being shown, and it looks like they're blowing on the boats to make them go. And one final picture here. Let's see. Let's get there. A sportsman entry heat takes off as Hardy's Race for the Lake hosts the American Powerboat Association Inboard Nationals in Decatur on Saturday, June 6th. And this one is up out of the water. It's a tight shot. The front end of the boat is not shown on the left side of the photo, but the hull is shown up out of the water. And it looks like hydrofoils, maybe, or 2 of them out of the underside of the boat into the water, and a big wake and splash behind the boat. It looks like a smaller boat, and it's driven by a yellow-helmeted, yellow life vest driver. And let's see, a few spectators in the background. On to the local and state on A2. Police trespasser pulled a BB gun. Tony Reed Decatur has this article. Police report that a Decatur man who confronted juveniles trespassing in his backyard and jumping on his trampoline suddenly also found himself looking down the barrel of a gun. Patrol officers arrived and apprehended the teenage boy with the weapon that turned out to be a BB gun, according to Sergeant Adam Seifman with the Decatur Police Department. The kid with the BB gun was given a juvenile court appointment for the offense of aggravated assault, Seifman said. The trouble started around 8:17 p.m. Friday when the man noticed a group of children on the trampoline in his yard in the 1000 block of West Decatur Street. He wanted them to leave, and one of the juveniles started cussing at the resident, Seifman said. That was when the kid removed what appeared to be a firearm and pointed it at the resident. Seifman said it was not clear from reports from the scene whether any of the juveniles involved was known to the resident. All preliminary offenses, such as the charge against the boy, are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. From the State House, inside lawmakers' late push for Bears Stadium legislation. This article is by Rich Miller. 6 days before the last day of the spring state legislative session, Senator Bill Cunningham, Democrat, Chicago, gave me two big reasons why it was so difficult to push a Bears Stadium bill across the finish line. Cunningham, as you know, is the chief sponsor of the Senate's Bears bill. One, every stadium-related legislation passed in Illinois included the Chicago mayor and the Illinois governor pulling in the same direction. This time, that didn't happen. Two, moving a stadium location within a state pits Illinois municipalities against each other, and you don't want to do that, quote, particularly when the municipality on the losing side has way more members than any other municipality in the state, unquote. Cunningham told reporters more recently that stadiums which have moved within the same state didn't involve their state legislatures. Instead, local governments picked up the tab. Senator Cunningham appeared on a WSCR radio program last week and said, for most of the last few weeks, most senators wanted to do nothing. But then he said, we thought it was important to pass something that would make it easier for the Bears to build a new stadium in Illinois. So they started putting together a plan. Reasons abounded for wanting to do nothing. For example, some senators didn't want to help the Bears move to the suburbs, but some didn't want to help billionaire team owners at all. And some didn't like the original House plan and were ready to move on. And, as Cunningham said on the Senate floor, his constituents mostly wanted to keep the Bears here, but didn't want to give them a single taxpayer penny to do it. But why, I asked Cunningham later, did he wait until May 30th, the day before the end of the session, to pull the plug on the House-passed megaprojects bill? And what was the impetus for the coming up with an alternate plan? Cunningham first explained that he'd held several meetings with caucus members after the House passed its own bill and tried out several versions of a slimmed-down proposal. None of those bills could pass. Let's do nothing probably had a plurality of senators behind it, he said. At the start of last week, Cunningham said it became clear that it just couldn't be passed. So by midweek, I began floating the Municipal Stadium Authority concept to a handful of senators to see if that could find support. By then, however, the budget and lots of other hot topics became the center of discussion. The governor, by the way, specifically warned the Senate this could happen weeks ago when he said he wanted the legislation wrapped up well ahead of the end of session to avoid being caught in a last-minute session crunch. By Friday, May 29th, I felt the concept had enough support to start drafting a bill, Cunningham said. That bill didn't surface until late Sunday night, before session was previously scheduled to adjourn. I regret that we got to it as late as we did, but we simply had bigger fish to fry, Cunningham said, about the budget and other topics. And while I talked about the concept with House Bears bill sponsor Representative Cam Buckner, midweek, and he was generally supportive of giving it a shot, we got the bill to him too late for the House to take action. His timeline was generally confirmed by other insiders. Asked why a backup plan hadn't been formulated weeks before, Senate President Don Harmon's spokesperson said the question would be best addressed to the Bears. Cunningham and other legislators have been saying for a while that rumors about the football team having second thoughts about leaving Chicago damaged the legislative effort to help the Bears move to the suburbs. And that was why Cunningham's new proposal was designed to level the playing field for Arlington Heights and Chicago. The idea was to at least say that the city would be on equal footing with the suburbs, but it just came way too late in the session. And then on Friday, June 5th, the Bears issued a statement saying, "The team will advance our stadium development project in Hammond, Indiana," although no site was specified. More importantly, though, a Bears official spoke by phone with both Senator Cunningham and Representative Buckner before the announcement. Both of the legislators in charge of the Bears negotiations said they were told by team president CEO Kevin Warren that the Bears looked forward to continuing the discussion about keeping the team in Illinois. It's the saga that won't die. Decatur City Council. McDaniel seeks another term. Tony Reed, Decatur. City Councilman Pat McDaniel is the first to admit he doesn't have all the answers to the problems that plague his city, but he is ready, willing, and able to try and find them. McDaniel, 77, just announced he is running for city council again in the April 6th election. And while it may be somewhat unusual to hear a politician admit he doesn't have the correct solution lined up for every difficulty in every situation, McDaniel said he believes the way forward is being willing to work with others and hear other ideas to find those solutions. "I will continue, as I always have, to take the time to listen to our citizens of our community who might have solutions for solving those issues as I continue to travel around to see what is happening in my hometown," he said. No one can accuse McDaniel of not being intimately familiar with the place. Born and raised in Decatur, he returned there after military service in Vietnam and never left. He first made an unsuccessful run for mayor in 2002 and was defeated several times in races for city council. He later served as executive director of the Macon County History Museum Complex and worked as a reporter for the Decatur Tribune newspaper covering city council. "I fell off a ladder in 2010. Fell some 25 feet and was in the hospital for 6.5 days, recalled McDaniel. "I told Tribune editor Paul Osborne, I think I'm going to run for city council again. And he said, Pat must have hit his head when he fell." McDaniel was duly elected in 2011 and served until 2021, and also served as mayor pro tem. Served as liquor control commissioner since 2021, and served as the City of Decatur Plan Commission for 2 years. He was re-elected to the City Council in 2023. McDaniel said he wants another term to push the issues he considers highest priorities: public safety, maintaining and improving city infrastructure, and pushing ahead with efforts to improve neighborhoods while expanding economic developments and jobs. "This is my hometown, and I care about it," he said. "And when I retired, I didn't move out of town. I lived in 9 different neighborhoods growing up. We moved around a lot, and then as an adult, I lived in another 3. So I care about Decatur. I want the best for it." Common sense and government don't always go together, but I always try to use a little common sense, and I do reach out and get out there to talk to people. Decatur voters will elect a mayor and fill 3 council seats next spring. Those 3 seats are held by McDaniel, Dennis Cooper, and Lisa Gregory. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf has announced plans to seek re-election. Councilman David Horn has announced plans to challenge her. Woman accused of hitting officer Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. A Decatur woman is facing multiple assault charges after police said she went wild in a local bar, attacking customers, police officers, and paramedics. The trouble happened just after midnight Saturday in the 800 block of South 22nd Street. Sergeant Adam Seifman with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers had been called to Shore 22 because the heavily intoxicated woman, 44, was causing trouble. The caller said she was trying to fight people at the bar and at one point the customers had to restrain the female. Siefman added. He said arriving officers tried to take the woman into protective custody because she was in no fit state to look after herself. Protective custody is when you have someone who, with their level of intoxication or drugs, they can't reasonably take care of themselves, Siefman explained. One of the officers reached out and grabbed her wrist to prevent her from leaving, and then she spun around and threw a punch with her left hand connecting with the right side of the officer's neck, Siefman said. Then they got her into an ambulance, at which point she dug her fingernails into the arm of the paramedic. She was biting at EMS staff. When she finally got to hospital, she had to be restrained by numerous nurses, security guards, EMS personnel, and officers. The woman faces preliminary charges of aggravated battery to a peace officer, aggravated battery to medical staff, and resisting arrest. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. Wrestler wins 7 photo awards. Press Association also places Beckett 3rd for Houston Obituary Tribute. Scott Perry, East Peoria. Herald and Review photojournalist Joseph Wrestler earned 7 awards, 2 of them for first place in the Illinois Press Association's Excellence in News contest. Strong execution was a common theme in the comments on Wrestler's photos shared by those who judged the statewide contest for work done in 2025. The awards were announced Thursday during the Illinois Press Association convention held in East Peoria. Wrestler's first place awards came in the sports photo and portrait personality categories. The sports photo shows members of the MacArthur High School basketball team celebrating a regional championship. You can just feel the joy with this one, the judge wrote. The portrait personality photo shows twins Mackenzie and Michaela Goforth. I love this photo. The hair across their face, their expressions, them looking at each other. It says so much while just being a single still image, the judge wrote. The photo ran with a story about the 11 sets of twins at Montessori Academy for Peace. I have had the pleasure and honor of working alongside some very talented photographers over the years, and Joey rates right up there with the best, said Scott Perry, local news editor for the Herald and Review. We are lucky to have someone with his amazing ability to tell the stories of the people and events in our communities. The newspaper also came away with a first place in General Excellence, an award which recognizes the overall presentation of the newspaper when it comes to scope of coverage in news and other sections, as well as excellence in writing and photography, promotion of community interests, vigor in the editorial page, advertising, enterprise, and design. The Herald and Review demonstrates how a small newspaper can still be ambitious with a clear eye toward civic impact, the judge wrote. Wrestler also earned second place in the sports photo portrait personality category for a photo showing a man with his racehorse, third place in the sports photo category for a photo of the two hurdlers crossing the finish line, third place in the feature category for a photo of two boys making bubbles, fourth place in the portrait personality category of a photo of Joseph Joey Little, or Little Joey Tarzan, and fourth place in the general news category for a photo of a woman dancing at the Juneteenth Freedom Day celebration. Staff writer Donette Beckett earned a third place award for an obituary tribute on Avon Theater owner Skip Houston. This was a short but moving tribute, the judge wrote. The Herald and Review's sports section, under the direction of sports editor Justin Kahn and staff writer Will Foley, was recognized as the fourth best in the state in the daily newspaper category. These awards earned the Herald and Review enough points to finish in fourth place in the sweepstakes competition for Patrick Coburn Award of Excellence. Allison Petty, an award-winning reporter and editor and longtime news leader in Central Illinois, was named the 2025 Editor of the Year by the Illinois Press Association. One of the things I've always loved about journalism is it's bigger than any one person, and so it feels weird to accept this, but to the extent that it is a reflection of the people who got me here and the people that I have been so lucky to work alongside, I am honored and really grateful, she said, accepting the award Thursday. Petty began her career as a reporter in Decatur. She went on to spend more than 4 years at the helm of the Central Illinois newsrooms, which include the Herald and Review, the Pantograph in Bloomington, Journal Gazette and Times Courier in Mattoon, and Woodford County Journal in Eureka. She has most recently served as a local news director for Lee Enterprises, with a focus on implementing new technology across the company's news division. Last month, Petty was named digital editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And the photos, two of them, are shown here. The MacArthur team celebrating winning the IHSA 3A Girls Basketball Regional Championship in Mount Zion against Mount Zion in Decatur on Friday, February 21st. This is the one that earned Joseph Ressler a first place in the sports category. And it's shown lots of droplets of water, maybe beautifully captured and still over the head of the coach being poured on by number 24 as she holds the regional championship plaque in her right arm and pours out of a Gatorade cup just on top and surrounding all sorts of water droplets and globs. Really, really neat frozen action photo and showing action of enjoy. And then the twins, Mackenzie and Michaela, go forth that portrait photo as well. Exoplanets with magnetic fields discovered. It's one characteristic that can make a planet habitable. Will Dunham, Reuters, Washington. We don't have much time, so I'll read as much as I can. Based on the behavior of winds on seven large hot gas exoplanets, astronomers have obtained the strongest evidence to date that planets beyond our solar system possess magnetic fields. The finding, based on observations by telescopes in Chile and Hawaii, deepens the understanding of exoplanets by showing that at least some share an important characteristic present in all but two of the solar system's eight planets. A magnetic field is an invisible force field generated by the movement of electrically conducting material deep inside a planet, a molten metal core combined with the planet's rotation. While none of the gaseous exoplanets in this study are candidates for hosting life, a magnetic field could be one of the factors that helps make a rocky planet like Earth habitable. These exoplanets each orbit very close to a large hot star, with one side permanently facing the star and the other side perpetually facing away as the Moon does with Earth. This type of planet is called a hot Jupiter because of a comparable size and composition to our solar system's largest planet, though with a much higher temperature. The seven planets ranged in mass from roughly the same size as Jupiter to more than three times as massive. Strong winds blow from the hot day side to the cold night side on these planets. The orbital proximity of the planets to their host stars leaves them with scorching atmospheric temperatures on the day side. All are closer to their host star than the solar system's innermost planet, Mercury, is to the Sun. Okay, we need to end here, but I think I might come back to this in the second half hour. So we'll end right now the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026. Take a short break and return with the second half hour.